Welcome to CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter, at MattMooreCBS. Or if you want me making comments about DeMar DeRozan, they're going to get me in a lot of trouble by calling him a Costco Kobe. And that is a compliment. You can find me at HP Basketball. I'm joined by Brad Botkin, NBA writer for CBS Sports. Brad and I were on the line, and we were just talking, and we were going to do a podcast, and then we got sidetracked talking about a whole other topic that I don't want to discuss about Steph Curry and a tweet from Dave McMenamin. But he did. We were talking about this, and we were having an interesting conversation, and it gets down to, I think, a lot of this about the ideas behind Curry and how he's evaluated and where he stands in kind of the NBA zeitgeist, et cetera. And the fundamental question that I think is most, that we agree is most interesting, is what's more valuable in the NBA, versatility or specifically exceptionalism in shooting, which is obviously what Steph brings to the table. That's not to say that he's not a good passer. He's obviously an incredible finisher. He's a better defender than he gets credit for. He creates a lot of steals with his on-ball pressure. He's able to be manipulated defensively, but so are a lot of guys. But really, we all know that you can take everything else with Steph, and he's an average shooter. He's not the same guy, but he is that shooter. And so what kind of the value is there of that? So, like, just to start off with, like, Brad, to you, because you value gravity so much, and I think a lot of people have gotten to where they're thinking this way, that gravity and that shooting ability simply trumps every other kind of ability or combination of versatility.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of like an NFL quarterback that can throw from the pocket. That's just, it's such a fundamental part of the game that it, even if you can't do everything else, it's just by nature, it's just more important. If you look at, like, I've always been an advocate for that John Wall's a little bit overrated. And the reason that I think that is because of his lack of gravity, the way that you don't have to defend him. He's a pretty low average player in half court sets, basically because you don't have to respect his shot.
Well, all right, I want to stop you right there, because if we're going to do this, we got to be able to present facts. So this point was brought up on the Ringer podcast the other day with Kevin O'Connor and Bill Simmons, and they were like, well, he's just an average player in the half court. So just as you can make the argument that Steph Curry, because of his gravity, is more exceptional because of his one individual element, and that overshadows everything else. John Wall's passing really does it covers up everything else. In the half court, counting his own possessions and assists, John Wall is in the 86th percentile in points per possession produced via Synergy Sports with a 1.279. That is an absolutely incredible mark for a guy that's as high usage as he is. In other words, like, him in the half court is in the 86th percentile of the league. There's really no way to argue that he's not that valuable in the half court. In reality, he's actually more valuable in the half court at 86th percentile than he is in transition at 85th. So that entire narrative of John Wall not being valuable is simply incorrect. If you want to say that he's just not as good of a jump shooter, that's absolutely correct. He was in the 27th percentile on jump shots, which is well below league average, and it was really, really bad. However, in pick-and-roll situations, as just the score, not counting any passing whatsoever, John Wall was still in the 66th percentile league-wide. So he's clearly still able to get buckets despite not having the jumper that he needs. And that's not to say that John Wall is better than Steph Curry. He's clearly not. But I cannot go to this podcast with any more conversation about John Wall being not valuable in the half court. It's simply false.
Well, okay, you took that farther than... Yes, his points and assists, he is effective in the half court. But the original question was, why is the shooting so valued? And the bottom line is, all those things that John Wall does in the half court, okay, that you think makes him this great player in the half court, they're not what Curry is simply because of the shooting. So that's just something that you're going to, you know, you kind of just have to accept. His passing that he's going to come up with, he's a terrific passer. He gets to the hole a lot stronger than Curry. He does a lot. He checks off a lot more boxes than Curry. But to suggest that he's more dangerous and more productive in half-court settings than Curry is ridiculous.
I'm not saying that.
Okay, so that's, you asked me why in the beginning. Why would I value shooting over everything else? Well, it's because it's the most valuable thing. That's all there is to it. Not only for yourself, but
so if you just have jump shooters, do you win? Do you win if you just have jump shooters? Like, if you had a team of four Steph Currys and a center, do you win?
Well, I mean, at a lot of times, that's basically what the Warriors have.
Do you think so? So you don't think that their defense is what enables them, that puts them in that position?
No, their defense is incredible.
Well, you're not going to have that kind of a defense with four Steph Currys on the floor. You're going to be a below-average defense. Like, Steph Curry's good in his specific role because of what the other guys enable him to be able to do. I think that really his on-ball stuff is really impressive. And he, especially in these playoffs, that's the best defensive performance I've seen of him in his career. He was amazing on defense in these playoffs.
Yeah, guys have to compliment each other.
But you just said, like, they're basically Steph Curry with four Steph Currys sometimes. Well, okay, if you put four Steph Currys on the floor and we're talking about versatility, they're going to be a below-average defense, which means that they're going to make a lot of shots and they're going to give up a lot of points. And do you think that that team is going to be more successful than a more versatile squad? Like, if you have four Giannis Antetokounmpos, what's going to happen then?
No, but you're switching the narrative on the fly here. We're sticking – right now we're talking about half-court offense.
But this is your argument. If you're going to present these things as the way that you construct the argument, I have to be able to, like, criticize them and approach whether or not they're on par.
But right now we're just talking about shooting and the view of shooting. So I said right now, offensively, in the half-court, the Warriors are basically a bunch of shooters and a center. That's what they are.
You don't think that they have that? You don't think that they have a bunch like
They have a lot of other stuff, but the reason that
is Draymond Green just like a non-existent part of the offense? Because Draymond Green's not a real. He can shoot, but I mean Draymond Green's definitely not like a shooter. That's definitely not true, and he plays a huge role on that team. I mean, he shot 31% from 3-point range last year, and they won 67 games. Is Kevin Durant just a shooter? Is that the case? Because like Kevin Durant's one of the most versatile and excellent players in the league.
Steph Curry's not just a shooter. Steph Curry's one of the best finishers in the league. Listen, the Warriors, tell me right now that the Warriors offensively are not the Warriors because of shooting. You're trying to break down all these like nuanced things, and it's not that there's no validity to any of them. It's not that the Warriors can't do other things. Their versatility is well chronicled. But are the Warriors offensively the Warriors because of their shooting? More than anything else.
It's an interesting question because here's what's funny is that we talk about it. I've noticed this, right? So the media, like, we're just wowed by their shooting. We're like, oh my God, like, how do they shoot? Like, they're just shooting. And so you ask coaches, you're like, can you believe they're shooting? And every single coach responds the same way. They're all like, they are incredible shooters. But if you notice, like, look how they move the ball and how everyone's engaged and everyone's cutting and everyone's moving and how they always, and they're always able to find open looks and they just keep moving the ball constantly.
No doubt.
And now if you want to say at its core, like, are the Warriors because of their shooting? The 2016 team, I think probably yes. That's definitely true. I think the 2015 and the 2017 teams were maybe a little bit more balanced. Not that that isn't important, because you're not going to win a title without shooting, unless you're the Pistons. Like, okay. You're just not going to – it's not going to happen.
Teams were the same team.
Do what?
2015 and 16 were the same team. So
no, because that's the thing. Is I believe that every season – teams actually wind up different. And if you want proof of that, look at the Boston Celtics, who in 2016 – were a really great defensive team that eventually turned it on and got their offense, which went from 22nd to, I think, 11th in the back half of the season, to where it was pretty decent going into the playoffs. And then if you look at 2017, the Celtics' offense was in the top five for essentially the entire season, but their defense was 22nd or 18th to 22nd for a large chunk of the season until they made a really late run against some questionable opponents and they were able to bump up their numbers a little bit there. Like, they were an entirely different team in 2017. You could say, well, they added Al Horford. Okay. That's fair, but Al Horford shouldn't have made their defense worse. They had the same guys. They just existed differently. And we see this year to year with a lot of teams where they actually fluctuate quite a bit. There are some squads that, you know, if you have enough talent and ability, you're going to be like top five in each category. But even then, there's a big difference between number one and number five. And so, like, all of these things kind of fluctuate. So I don't think that the 2015 and 16 teams were the same, because the 2015 team put a real emphasis on defense. And, like, Draymond talked about that after blowing a 3-1 lead and suffering the worst collapse in NBA Finals history, that, like, they needed to get back to what they do really well, which is defend at a high level. Kerr talked about how He kind of hinted basically that the team started feeling itself too much, that they were always just like expecting all these shots to go in, and when they didn't, they really struggled. And you saw that versus the Thunder, and then you saw that versus the Cavs. And then they got Kevin Durant, and it didn't matter anymore. But I think that that's kind of relevant, is that the 2016 team wasn't quite the same. Now, let's get back to your central point, which is that the shooting is what makes the Warriors. I don't necessarily agree with that, but let's say that I do, and I'll grant you your premise. Where do you go from there?
Well, one, I want to touch on what you just said, because I think it's fair to say that teams get better or worse. They fluctuate in their production from year to year, but the identity of their team, especially a team like the 2015 and 2016 Warriors, especially when you're the same personnel is there. You're the same team. That's like saying
Draymond said specifically, like, we put defense first in 2015, and that was a big deal for them. And I actually talked to Iguodala about this at the finals. He said people do not put enough understanding or credit on how A, our guys fit together, or B, how this team defends. And David West said the same thing, because he's like, I've been around a lot. He's like, and look, those guys are shooters and they're awesome, and our offense is always going to cook and it's unbelievable. He said, but, you know, our defense is where we put it. Like, we go into every game believing that's an emphasis. And the Warriors talked about that throughout this year, that that's where they start. And when they do and they get those transition opportunities, that's where your shooting becomes even bigger. It becomes an even bigger deal. And it's even more important. But I do think, like, if you want to talk about the identity of a team, where they put their emphasis really matters. And their emphasis was different in 2016 than it was in 2015.
But they sloughed off a little bit in an area. That's like saying that a guy who shoots 47%, like, take Curry, for instance. He shoots whatever he shot, 45, 46% from 3 1 year, and then he goes down to 40 this year. He's not as good a shooter this year, so he's not a shooter anymore. Like, the Warriors are suddenly not a defensive team. Like, they sloughed off a little bit. They weren't as good defensively. And it maybe cost them, and they still got within 1 minute of a finals victory. So the point is, the Warriors have this whole run, more than anything else, is on their ability to shoot the ball. You could argue their defense is pretty darn close to being equally responsible.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
But they're shooting, and the reason that they move the ball and all this cutting, all this stuff that sort of becomes romantic to talk about, like, they move the ball so well. Wow. They're so unselfish. They do all these things.
So
but
do you think that they would be as good if Steph Curry just walked the ball up every time and shot from 45 feet? Is that?
No, but I think that that other teams probably can't implement all of that cutting and ball movement. Some of it is just effort and focus, but
and unselfishness. That's a lot of it, is that, like, Steph doesn't dominate the ball like everybody wants him to, and that actually helps everybody else get involved. Like, Kerr's talked a lot about that as well.
Absolutely, but to me, and this could be argued, but to me, the threat of your shooting, both individually and as a team, is what trickles down the most. And the reason that I think that all this space that the Warriors have to operate in, both on and off the ball, is a function of the threat of their shooting. Like, I don't think they led the league in three-pointers last year, but they're still the most feared three-point shooting team.
That's true.
So it's not always just this guy shooting this number or this team shooting this many threes. In my opinion, the reason that all of the stuff that the Warriors do so great, cut, move the ball, share the ball, player movement, all these things, they're all terrific, and all other teams should be employing as much of it as possible. But the bottom line is they probably can't employ it to the degree the Warriors can, because they don't have the best shooting backcourt of all time and Kevin Durant.
Okay. Okay, so and in your mind, that's going to cover up for – and so what my thing is versatility, right, which is like you're really great in a lot of different areas. And so I guess the question then would be – I'm saying that you cannot be exceptional in any one area, but if you're really, really good in all of these areas, that's more valuable. And so I guess the question would be, if the Warriors weren't a good defensive team, and if they weren't a good passing or cutting team, and if their players just weren't good passers, or they just didn't have good recognition or ball IQ or any of those things, and they were just shooters, how good do you think they would be?
Not, they wouldn't even be close to the team that they are.
That, to me, kind of settles it, because if you have a team that's really versatile, you're going to be able to win in a lot more ways.
Well, you can't. Yeah, but again, the original argument was, does shooting trump that? And so the bottom line is, yeah, if you have two teams that are both versatile and they do all these things, but the Warriors have the shooting, and
so,
that's why.
But you're saying that a more versatile team than the Warriors, which is, by the way, incredible to think about, because the Warriors are, and most of their success is not most of their success, but a lot of their success is predicated upon how versatile they are, like the switching and Draymond and everything else, and Clay being able to guard like 1-2-3 and all of these things. Like, their versatility is hugely important to what they do. But you're saying that a less versatile team.
You'd have to be a pretty versatile team. Like, the Boston is a pretty versatile team. Boston has a lot of nice pieces. They play both sides of the ball. This year Hayward will help out a lot, but Isaiah was kind of the only kind of go-to scorer, but so they lacked in that area a little bit. But they kind of do a lot of really good things. But you've been one of the biggest detractors of the Celtics, because they just flat out can't score. You know, they just can't do it.
My thing is actually their defense. That's actually my problem is that I think their offense is fine. I think they score at a really great rate. They have shooter. Look, Avery Bradley's a good shooter, and Isaiah is an excellent shooter, and all of these things. My problem is that I don't think they can defend that. I think it's really hard to cover up for Isaiah Thomas. I actually have been thinking a lot about, they may have the personnel to do it now that Bradley's gone. Even though Bradley's an excellent on-ball defender, having a 6'3 guy next to a 5'9 guy in Isaiah Thomas, that to me was a specific problem that they had struggles kind of covering for. I think Hayward and the emergence of Jalen Brown and the way that they're going to look next year, or if Marcus Smart starts, that may empower them a little bit. I'll look to your point. Let's look at the top 10 teams in effective field goal percentage last year. The Warriors, one of the greatest teams ever. The Cavs rolled to the finals. The Rockets, you know, really were an extremely strong team, had a very good shot going to the conference finals. A lot of weird things went on in that Spurs series. The Clippers had a really good season. They just, you know, the team was stale and they needed to move on. Then Blake got hurt and everything fell apart. So they were fourth. The Nuggets were fifth, but, you know, their defense was absolutely horrendous. Did you know the Wizards were actually sixth in effective field goal percentage?
They're a good team. Wizards need to get a bench, but, yeah. You know, I came off earlier in the year like I was hating on John Wall. I mean, I'll admit, and you know this, 2 years ago, I really did hate on John. I really thought John Wall was one of the most overrated players. I still think he is a little bit, but John Wall is an undeniably terrific player, and they can do something in Washington. I think I was really hoping that they could pick up a third player this year, maybe end up getting George there somewhere, because I really want to see what Wall can do with elite talent around him.
The Bucks were surprisingly seventh. That's shocking to me, but true. They were seventh in effective field goal percentage last year. Made the playoffs. The Jazz, one of the better teams in the league, 50-plus wins, 8th. The Celtics, 9th, the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. And the San Antonio Spurs, the number two team with 67 wins, or 60-plus wins, rather, they were 10th. So you've got 10 teams, and you've got one squad in there that did not make the playoffs in effective field goal percentage. Versus, you know, the problem is, like, I'm not saying that just defense. It's got to be versatility, I think, is kind of the key. So you got to be able to do a lot of things really well. And part of that, though, is, like, I don't think you can build an ultra-versatile team without shooting. So I would give you that. But this kind of dovetails into another kind of interesting conversation we can talk about, which is, like, there's all this Kyrie Irving stuff going on. And James and I talked about yesterday or Wednesday on the podcast about, can you build around Kyrie Irving? So you would acknowledge that Kyrie Irving is a shooter, right? Like, he's got the same finishing ability, if not better than Steph. Like, Steph's incredible. So is Kyrie. They're both amazing. Kyrie's obviously not as good of a shooter as Steph Curry, because Steph Curry's the best shooter of all time. But you would definitely label, like, Kyrie as a shooter, right? Like, a shooter score? Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. If you take Kyrie and you take John Wall, and you pluck them onto any sort of random, non-specific, excellent team. The Bucks are a great example of this. Are the Bucks, because they have like a lot of versatility and can do a lot of different things, are the Bucks better with Kyrie Irving or John Wall?
John Wall.
Okay. Now, you can argue that because Giannis needs the ball all the time and he's kind of like the point forward, that's not true. I actually kind of think the opposite, where I've always wanted to see this with LeBron, with like a Chris Paul type, where one guy comes up, brings the ball up, saves LeBron that effort of bringing the ball up, because it is actually mentally taxing. Guys have talked about that. And then, like, sets the offense, runs everything, and you give LeBron and say, you're going to execute and run things. But you got a guy that can basically set the table. So I think I agree with you that John Wall would be better. You can look at this with like a lot of different teams in terms of like the middle of the pack kind of squads. The Blazers are a bad example because Dame's kind of in that conversation as well. The Pacers. If you put John, like, would the Pacers be better next season with Kyrie Irving or John Wall?
They're not going to be any good with you.
Right.
I think your point is well taken, that every situation is different and fit obviously matters. We're splitting hairs with all these guys being elite players.
And, well, and to your point, this is really key. If shooting is that, like, here's the thing, it doesn't really matter if Kyrie is the same level, because Kyrie's not Steph. You can put the bar at Steph, and you can say, if you get to Steph's level, that's what matters. It can't be below Steph. Like, that's how hard you got to be. In order to trump versatility, you have to be singularly one of the top three shooters of all time.
And when we were off the air, that's kind of where what I was arguing is that in basketball, and I don't think it's true for a guy like Kyrie Irving, obviously, because I think John Wall's a better player. If Kyrie Irving shot like Steph Curry and had all the – I think Kyrie Irving's a better ball handler. I think he's a better finisher. I think he's just a more creative player with the ball in his hands. I would say that he's better than John – but the shooting is the difference. And I don't think I'm really breaking any news here. I mean, Curry has completely changed the entire game globally by the way he plays. It's never going to be played the same. And that's not breaking any ground. I think – The interesting thing to me, it's probably a different argument too if we're talking about team versus individual. There's no team out there. Like the Warriors used to shoot, they shoot the hell out of the ball. When I was growing up in California, they shot the hell out of the ball. They run and they gun and they score a ton of points and they sucked. So I don't think anybody would argue that all you have to do is shoot and score. We all know that from a team standpoint, that's how you win these days. Switching on defense, positionless basketball, all of these things. They're hugely important, and there's probably not one element of the game right now from a team standpoint that can trump any of those. Individually, this is where it gets interesting to me. And I always make the counter to this in football. And I forget the defense. It's a fair point you make about quarterbacks don't have to play defense. But if we keep the conversation within the parameters of the job description, take Cam Newton and Tom Brady in football. Cam Newton checks off way more boxes. If you're at the scouting combine, if you're evaluating a player, if you're trying to do these, if this guy played on this team, how good would he be, and comparing them that way, if you're trying to do any of those exercises, Cam Newton's going to come out on top. He does more. He does more on the field than Tom Brady. But the one thing that Tom Brady does makes it not even a debate that he's a better player than Cam Newton. And I think a similar thing is true of a guy like Curry. And say, I don't know, Paul George, who does way more than Curry on a court. And I'm sure there are people out there that because of that, in basketball, for some reason, the emphasis on how many boxes you check is so heightened. And in the other sports, it's like we kind of really don't care. If you're a DH in baseball and you hit 45 home runs, you're getting your due. No one's hardly even talking about, well, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. It's just what he does do. And in basketball, we tend to talk so much about what guys can't do, we end up kind of devaluing these things that they do, and we contradict ourselves. So we'll say about Curry, well, he doesn't play the other end of the court. He's sloppy with the ball. But then we'll vote Russell Westbrook MVP. You know, when he's a very low efficient shooter, he's a terrible defender. He basically is a definition of a chucker. So it's kind of like, one, we can't get our framework straight in terms of how we're evaluating players. And two, I do think that we somehow still undervalue, because this kind of all started with Curry, I think somehow we still do undervalue the impact of his shooting. Somehow. Yeah. Somehow. I think we do.
Well, I think part of it is okay, so you reach this point where, and you're analyzing players, and you and I tend to take different paths on this, which is, you know, you say, because, you know, you just described Russell Westbrook and made him into what, if anybody just read those comments, would just be like, oh, well, Russell, like, if aliens came down and read that and were able to read English and were like, wow, Russell Westbrook just must suck. Like, he just must not be good at all. And I'm sure that you don't feel that way, even though you're a Curry fan and therefore you have to feel that Russell Westbrook is trash. Like, I'm sure that in your objective viewpoint, you know how good Russell Westbrook is at everything else. Like, he's actually really incredible. He's an underrated playmaker. He has, like, his ability to, because that's part of the thing, is you talk about shooting. The shooting from Steph is more valuable than this. However, Westbrook's singular ability to get to the rim no matter what is in front of him is something that really bends the defense as well. It bends the defense. It doesn't bend it like Steph's shooting. I'm not saying that.
We're weighing one against the other here. Again, I don't want to take it to a place where when you're pumping one guy up, that means you're killing another guy.
That's the point. And so, like, and the best part of it is when we get to this kind of juncture, right? You can either get more nuanced and try and find like really like the deep dive, this, that, and the other, like factoring fit and placement and like role and attitude and selfish and like all those things that I gravitate towards. Or you can realistically go the other way, which is you can try and simplify it and be like, let's not get caught up in the weeds. Let's just look at the overall impact. And the overall impact is you're able to watch the game and check the numbers and see that the Warriors have the best offense in NBA history the last couple of years consistently. And that the entire function of their offense is clearly Steph Curry. that they were great when Steph was kind of taking a back seat this year. But when he took back over around Christmas, they went to a whole other level. And in the playoffs, it was absolutely berserk when it was Steph and KD and Steph and KD and Steph and KD. Like, there was just absolutely no stopping it. That's what I think is maybe really fascinating is the Warriors were arguably the best team of all time in 2016, right up until Game 5 of the Finals. And then this year, they didn't win as many games, but by the end of it, like, I walked away from the playoffs being like, that is one of the best teams that we've ever seen. Like, that is undeniably one of the best teams that we've ever seen. And I actually think that if the 2017 team, because you remember we did that tournament of, like, the champions that I did before the playoffs started? Like, I think if the 2017 team played the 2016 team, I really do think the 2017 team wins, even though the 2016 team won 73 games, and Curry was even more lights out that season, because Durant gave them that versatility and that effectiveness and that those all those options. It was like the combination of Durant's efficiency as a shooter combined with his versatility and athleticism next to Steph that created something which we knew, like, you knew on the surface it was going to be amazing, but watching it, you were just like, there is nothing you can do. It is absolutely over. There is no question about how this is going to go for the next 4 years.
They checkmate the whole league when Durant goes there. I'm waiting for, and again, I'm not naive to how many things went the Warriors' way in them becoming the Warriors. You cite a lot of important things. Curry's ankle injury, they get him at a reduced contract. Draymond develops from, what, the 35th overall pick into an all-NBA player. Klay Thompson is probably better. He was picked 11th, but he's probably a lot better than people even thought he would be. A lot. Steve Kerr comes and fundamentally changes everything about that team. All the pieces were in place, and he makes them an entirely different team. Like, all of these, you're not going to become the greatest team ever, arguably, without a whole bunch of things coming together. So I understand that, and I think everybody does. What I'm waiting for is for some other player of in Curry's category. This is what would prove to me that some of these other things that you do on the court can equal a transcendent shooter. I'm waiting for one of these other guys, a Wall, a Kyrie, even a Chris Paul, who's never done this, as great as he is. When he shows up on a team, your team doesn't fundamentally change. It might change from a marketing standpoint. You're more exciting. You probably win 10 more regular season games. But what did the Clippers become? What are the Wizards? And I know that there's other things around them, but I believe that a lot of those things that happened in Golden State, that they were born from Curry.
Yeah, I think your thing is that you're drawing a direct line from they draft Curry, they become the greatest team of all time. And I'm saying there's a lot of stuff in there that didn't happen on these other teams. And you're also, like, with Chris Paul, you're completely overlooking the early part of his career, which is that the New Orleans Hornets were an absolute joke. And in 2008, they had a very serious shot at the NBA title. Now, the Warriors won, and that's awesome, and that's great, and they were better, and they were definitely, like, undeniably a better player. And, like, at this point, like, there's no really getting around it. Curry has two titles, Chris Paul has zero, and I'm not a count the rings guy, but Curry has two titles, Paul has none. Curry has the single greatest offensive season in history, in my opinion, in 2016. It's arguable, but that's where I land on it. Paul does not. Like, Steph Curry is undeniably a better player than Chris Paul, which is crazy because in 2013 I was like, well, there's no way that Steph Curry is better than Steve Nash. And now I'm like, that's a stupid question. Like, of course Steph Curry is better than Steve Nash.
That's all because of the shooting, right? We agree with that.
Yeah, it's all because of the shooting. You're right. And so, but I just would say that, like, you can't say that these other teams fundamentally didn't change. Like, Chris Paul fundamentally did change them.
Fundamentally is the wrong word. I guess to the levels that the Warriors shot up from a,
so, you know, they went, so if you remove the Kerr factor and the evolution there, the Warriors with Curry went from being a non-playoff team to a second round out. That's what they were, is that they lost in 2013, and you could say that they could have made the conference finals. They did not. And then the next year they lost in the first round. With Chris Paul, the Hornets went from not a playoff team to a second round team. And then they regress. And then guess what? Like, Steve Kerr didn't show up in New Orleans. The other guys didn't develop the same way because they were a little bit older. Like, they didn't have the reserves. The game was fundamentally different in terms of how it kind of crested with their specific play style at the same time. All of these things that enabled Curry didn't help him because he had to do it on his own. He did that. But, like, all of these things came together at the right moment for Curry to push them to that next level, occurred at the same time, and it didn't happen for all of these other guys. And
And I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I think, again, Curry, much like the Warriors as a whole, sort of skews all of these arguments. Because I think for most every other player, your argument on the side of versatility and doing more things on the court.
Well, my trump card is LeBron, right? LeBron. Like, if you want to say that Steph's like the greatest shooter of all time and that changes absolutely everything, I could say LeBron is the most versatile player of all time and that fundamentally changed everything. And you've got Curry being a part of two of the best teams ever in the 73 win team, that suffered the greatest collapse in NBA history. And then being a part of this team last year, which may be the best team ever and won two titles with them versus LeBron, who's been to eight straight finals. Is it eight? I think eight finals, something like that.
Eight for his career,
seven straight. And has been like the guy that everybody in his conference has had to get past. And it's a testament that the Warriors are better. And maybe that's the argument, right? Is like, there are ways to get around it. Like, I can argue against it. I could say, like, well, look, the Warriors are also this incredible defensive team, and they got Kevin Durant, and you have what happened in all of these things can be used, but you can also say, look, at the end of the day, Curry's 2-1 against LeBron, and if Curry's not the shooter, I'll give you this, if Curry's not the shooter that he is, no matter how good the Warriors are, they're not 2-1 against LeBron.
Right. And I think, for me, I guess what this comes down to, too, is, just don't overvalue versatility. I think versatility.
Don't overvalue shooting.
I'm not. I'm coming back your direction. I am. I'm not over. I think Curry skews the argument.
Yeah. Because yeah. That's the thing. So like, I guess here's the thing. It's like, you can overvalue versatility in terms of. I'll give you this. I'm trying to think of a guy who's like.
Think about this. How dumb did it sound when Barkley tried to say that Klay Thompson was a better player than Curry because he plays both sides of the floor?
Yeah, that was pretty dumb.
That's sort of like the most ridiculous overinflation of versatility. Like, I don't care how many things Klay Thompson does on the floor. He will never be better than Steph Curry.
I mean, but here's the thing is, like, because David West was talking about this, because he was, like, in awe of that 60, when he scored 60 and took seven dribbles or whatever. Like, Klay Thompson, this is what I think is really interesting. It's kind of like Paul George in this respect, because I'm writing this big thing on Paul George. With the Thunder, and one of the keys is that the reason I always thought Paul George was more valuable than Jimmy Butler is because they're about equal as defenders. Butler might be a smidge better. George is more versatile in what he's able to do. If you tell Paul George, you're going to play off ball, you're going to come off screens, you're going to catch and shoot, Paul George is like, do I get to run pick and roll sometimes? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Okay, great. Klay Thompson, same kind of deal. You can run him off of whatever, do anything, however. And that's what really makes him valuable, as well as them both being these defenders. Now, like, Curry's really good off ball. He's not as good as he is on ball, which is another amazing thing about him, by the way. But, like, you can run him off of screens and all this stuff, and he's still, like, absolutely berserk. So it's not, like, a one-to-one comparison. And that's why, like, Steph is better than Klay, I agree. But it, you know, Klay's not a spot-up shooter. And I guess even if you think of him as just a spot-up shooter, he is so exceptional at that. Like, that trumps a lot of what a lot of other guys would bring to the table as well, combined with his versatility. Like, that's the thing is... Yeah.
Again, this is me knocking Klay.
I know, but when you're so good defensively and you're capable of scoring 60 in three quarters, like, think about that. Like, if you want to take big picture stuff, Klay Thompson's a top end defender who can score 60 in three quarters. I don't know anybody else in the league that is like that outside of the absolute premier guys in the league.
Unbelievable player, but I would just ask you to hold Klay to the same benefiting from his system.
I do.
That you are.
Yeah, I do. Because that's the question is, like, if you put Klay Thompson on the Mavericks, he's not Klay Thompson. And the Mavericks are really good. I think it's possible that Klay could be great in a different way. It's the same thing with kind of like with Kyrie, right? Like, he could be great in maybe a different way. But I do think that versatility helps for everybody who doesn't have the shooting level of Steph Curry. I guess maybe that's kind of where we could get to an agreement on is, If you have the shooting ability of Steph Curry, that's more important than any versatility anybody's going to have outside of LeBron. But if you don't have Steph Curry's shooting ability, your versatility is going to wind up being more important than that.
That's when you start getting into conversations with guys like that I believe, and reasonable people can disagree on this because we're talking about the absolute cream of the crop. But when you start talking about guys like Westbrook and Harden, who it's sort of like the easy out, even though it's probably not true anymore, even though Curry's an average defender at best. The best thing you can say about him is he's got pretty good anticipation and he plays hard. So that's pretty much that. But I think for a long time, the easy counter when you tried to bring him up in the elite conversation was, well, he doesn't play defense. And it's sort of like you just leave it at that. And Harden doesn't play any defense. And Westbrook doesn't play any defense. So I think have the one transcendent thing that Curry does.
Yeah,
I agree. Those guys are a better question. I would think it'd be a very, very tough evaluation to say, who do you want on your team, James Harden or Paul George? I think that'd be a very, very difficult decision to make because you've got one guy who is one of the best ever at what he does, and you got one guy who checks a lot more boxes. And I think in the case of Curry, the transcendent skill would trump all the box checking.
I think a lot of it is I agree. It's a difficult conversation. I think a lot of it is that for you, like if I underrate shooting, which I think I probably do, like I did this, and this is why the Warriors have warped me, and longtime listeners will know this, that I had a real adjustment period of trying to understand that anybody could shoot like that. Because it was always like, well, yeah, you could shoot better or worse, and there's like ranges, but the Warriors are so far above that it does wind up skewing a lot of the conversation. But I think a lot of it is I think with you probably underrate passing a little bit because like you act as if like what James Harden and Steph Curry or Russell Westbrook do on the floor is the same as Steph Curry qualitatively, not quantitatively, but qualitatively. And it's not. This is part of my argument against gravity. Gravity is awesome and it's very important and you need it. And that's why, you know, and that kind of ties into our whole conversation. But there is a different level of production, responsibility, and creation to be attributed to between, oh, I'm such a good shooter that the defense sucks towards me, so you're more open, and I can actually pass the ball to you in pinpoint situations to get you a good look consistently so we score over and over and over again. Like the points produced stat that was used consistently in the MVP campaign that broke down in agonizing, disgusting, embarrassing detail in my MVP breakdown. Like Westbrook and Harden were absolutely lights out, leaps and bounds. But what's interesting is Curry was on that list and very close too, because that like Curry's passing does create a lot of threes and that winds up bumping it plus his own production. So he's like right there in that conversation. But on the same level, even if you want to say that, like, yeah, but Westbrook and Harden were still at the top of that list, along with John Wall, by the way, because he created so many friggin' points. And that passing really does matter. Like, passing is not just, like, a standard thing. Like, there is something really important about being a truly great passer. If you ask me what's important, shooting or passing, I would say shooting. And it's by a significant margin. But if you say, what's more important, being a league year great that is not a historic shooter, or being a great passer, good scorer, and defender, I would say good passer, scorer, and defender.
Okay, so then this is my point. Again, because we agree that Curry is a good passer. He's probably not Wall. He's not Wall. He's not Harden. I don't know about Westbrook. There's too many layers to that conversation. But
do you think Russell Westbrook is bad?
I don't think. There's no way I watch Russell Westbrook play and think he's really impacting the game with his passing. His overall playmaking, and he'll draw double teams and he'll drop off, and there's, you know, but he's not creating consistent shot opportunities, easy point blank shot opportunities like John Wall does. I just don't, you know, maybe I'm seeing that wrong. Maybe numbers wouldn't back that up. That's my quick take on that. But
where do you think that he was in assists per game?
I think assists are one of the most overrated stats in the league. That's why I don't jump to John Wall as a great passer, because he's got, what, 11 a game, somewhere around there probably. I never thought that, you know, Rondo was up there 10, 11. He's not really impacting the game with those numbers.
You don't think assists matter?
I think assists matter, but I think they're overrated. I think, you know, a lot of times assists are just, you know, a lot of times the hockey assist is really the more important pass. The way I think Curry, when we talk about him not being a great passer, I think we get too caught up in the fancy highlight passes, which a lot of times he screws up, and he tries to do too much, and he gets labeled as turnover prone, even though he turns it over less than Harden and Westbrook. We get caught up in those types of things, whereas a lot of his best passes are just the simple passes. He makes them at the right time on the perimeter. He swings it at the right time. He takes two dribbles in hard and kicks out at the right time. He's a terrific cross-court passer. He's a terrific passer in transition. And a lot of these things aren't the things that get the flash. And John Wall's a flashy passer. And a lot of times they lead to point blank opportunities. And again, I think he's a great passer, but all I'm saying is we can argue that Curry is at the very least a good passer. So it's not like you can argue what's more important, passing or shooting, and use him as the shooter and somebody else as the passer. The real argument would be a guy like Klay Thompson.
Well, I do want to stop right there for a second. What do you think Westbrook shot from 3-point range?
Under 35%.
Okay, so that's a bad shooter to you?
No, but it's not a shooter that like that's really going to impact the game. It's a
You don't think that Russell Westbrook – so you're saying that his passing doesn't impact the game and his shooting doesn't impact the game. Like, is your argument that Russell Westbrook does not impact the game?
No. Stop trying to twist this.
Well, I'm asking if his passing doesn't impact the game, because you said that. You said his playmaking does not impact the game, which I don't agree with, but that's what you said.
I didn't say his playmaking. I didn't say it. Playmaking encompasses everything. And that's really what impacts the game with Russell Westbrook, is everything. His absolute refusal to be stopped. Forget the refusal. You just can't stop him, even if you want to. You can't stop him from getting to the rim. You can't stop him from getting to where he wants to get on the floor. He is pretty deadly in the mid-range when he's got his game going, when he's in rhythm. But no, his three-point shooting on its own is not impacting games.
Okay,
at an elite level.
So his three-point shooting doesn't impact the game and his passing doesn't impact the game. So it's just his ability to get to the rim?
Russell Westbrook, I think we can pretty safely, we should be able to agree that Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook for the same, you know, he has one or two things that he's unstoppable at. It's the same as Curry's shooting. You know, don't try to turn a 34% shooter into this hugely impactful three-point shooter. Don't act like I'm like breaking news there that's not hugely swaying games. What are you even arguing? And I'm not saying this passing here and there. He doesn't make good passes. A lot of times simply the attention that he's drawing off of his force going to the rim, he's clearly going to create some opportunities here and there. But by and large, generally speaking, is his passing impacting games the way Walls is? No. I'm not breaking any news here.
I think the part of it is, so your argument is, with Curry is that his bad flashy passes get over criticized. I would tell you to probably go back and watch a lot of Westbrook passing film, because this is the key with him, having done like all the film work. His passes aren't flashy. That Westbrook is very much he fundamentally forces you into a situation and then makes an easy pass for a high percentage look. That's how.
So he's a good passer. There's no way he's a better passer than Curry.
Oh, you think that Steph Curry is a better passer than Russell Westbrook?
Well, I think they're at the very least, they're very equal players in that part of the game. Absolutely.
Okay. That's interesting.
Don't act like that's a crazy assertion. I mean, you're starting to make the argument like Russell Westbrook's magic or something. I mean, this guy, come on.
Westbrook was third in, like, as a comparison here, because assists are a pretty tangible, like, as much as you may not like it, they are a pretty tangible bit of evidence towards what kind of a passer you are in making meaningful passes. And Steph Curry was good last year. He was 12th in assists at 6.6. Westbrook had 4 more assists than him per game.
You know how much more the ball moves from player to player on the Warriors than it does on the Thunder? Pretty much every person, Westbrook is either shooting or the guy he passes to is shooting. So, again, you love to get into the nuances of things. Don't try to take Curry's assist number against Westbrook's assist number when the ball's probably moving 5 more times in that possession after Curry gets rid of it. It's no way you can compare those numbers.
Okay. So I mean, I'm surprised, but I guess your argument is Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry is a better passer than Westbrook. Okay.
Equal.
Okay. I would say that's fair. I think that defensively, they're pretty close. Curry's better, but it's not a huge margin because Westbrook's a lot more capable defensively because of his athleticism and size, but Curry's effort is significantly higher. It's just like worlds better.
Forget about the box checking. Who's impacting the game more? They're probably about equal.
I mean, I'd even say that because Curry isn't necessarily bad in any key area, that he's improved so much, that I actually say Curry is more impactful than Westbrook. Like, I don't think it last season he was the most impactful player. But then again, I voted Harden as that, so I didn't vote Westbrook as that either. But I think, especially, like, if Durant wasn't on the team and Curry had a bigger role, he would be the most impactful player. That's what it was in 2015 and 16, obviously. So that's, okay, like, a key thing.
This is morphing into who's better, Curry or Westbrook.
Well, I mean, there's no question. I'm not arguing that. I was just surprised that you took the approach of saying that Curry's a better passer than Westbrook. What do you think the gap is in secondary assists per game between Westbrook and Curry?
That's a good question. I would guess that it's not as much as the assists.
Oh, it's not, because like secondary assists, like there's actually very few of them in the league. Like it's not a huge kind of like,
even relatively speaking, I wouldn't say that the gap is as significant.
Right. I mean, I think Curry's ahead. Like Curry leads the league in secondary assists with 2.2.
Okay, so then if you want to throw the assists argument for the numbers, then you could just counter with that. And all that comes down to is team makeup. And
I mean, you could, but basically what happens is if Curry gives the ball to somebody else and they throw a really good pass, then Curry gets the secondary assist. It's just not as valuable. I mean, it's valuable and it's important to look at, but those numbers are more indicative of like the unbelievable unselfishness and spacing that the Warriors have. Like that's a better indicator. Now, if you want, here's like maybe the best argument for you. The gap between the ranking league wide Westbrook is third and Curry is ninth. And then in secondary assists, Curry is number one and Westbrook is like way the hell down at like 20 some odd.
I think again, very few. This is sort of like in baseball when they compare shortstops and you get caught up in like the unbelievable plays that they make. And realistically, 95% of the plays that they're making are sort of within this box on the field. And I think a lot of that's true with passing too. So I think very rarely is Curry making a pass to Klay Thompson and then Klay Thompson's making some unbelievable highlight reel pass.
No, you're right.
Up with a secondary assist. That's
you're right.
By and large, this is happening because of the way that he's manipulating the whole court. And then he makes whatever pass he makes at the right time. And then the whole possession trickles down from there. And that's how most of the secondary assists are happening.
Okay.
So that would be my argument.
Okay. I think a lot of it comes from he gets double teamed on the blitz, is able to get the pass out without being intercepted, and then inevitably a help defender comes over, and then there's a secondary assist. Like, there's just a lot of that stuff where it's pretty easy with the Warriors. If you blitz him and he's able to get the ball to Draymond on the short roll, or if he finds a shooter on the perimeter, whoever the help guy is that's going to his roll man, that guy's always going to be open. So it's like a 1-2 immediate kick for a three-pointer. And
well, I had a question for you. What constitutes an assist? I don't know this. So say Curry gets blitzed at 35 feet, throws over the top to Draymond at the top of the key, and now he's running a 4-on-3 downhill, and he takes two dribbles into the key and kicks out. Does that take away the secondary assist?
No.
Okay, so what's the rule? When does that not become an assist? Well, okay, so you're saying it's just the last person to have passed to the assister.
No, it's judged by my understanding from it is from the tracking data is there's a time frame. If you pass to a guy and another pass is made after that, the algorithm records a secondary assist for that. It's based off of like a time frame. Like if you make a pass that the cameras record, and then there's another pass that comes within a certain time frame, because you can't be like, I'm gonna give the guy the ball and he's gonna hold it for 15 seconds. And then he's going to pass it, and then you get a secondary assist off of that. That's not how it goes. There's like a mechanism for if it's pass, pass. And I'm not sure like how long a time that is. I haven't been privy to. But
I just wondered if the dribble was what canceled it out. If that then just became a playmaker.
No, because if he passes it to Draymond on the roll, he gets credit for the secondary assist. That's how he gets a lot of them. So
even if Draymond takes two hard dribbles in.
Yeah.
Then yeah, that's how he is getting a lot of them.
Yeah, but I mean, that's still like valuable. Like getting it to that, making that pass is, and it's something he struggled with. If you remember that overhand hook pass that he throws whenever he's running the pick and roll, and he throws that overhand hook pass to try and get it to Draymond at the top of the key.
Yeah, you got to be. Warrior fans are holding their breath every time they.
Yeah, that got sniped a lot. They changed the angles on that this year, and Curry's done a lot better job of like getting around the corner and throwing a bounce pass to him on the roll. Like their just understanding of each other has gotten to the point where they can adjust to it. Those were way down last season because he's really good on that stuff.
Well, that his mom makes him pay him like $100.
Yeah, and like I think you know you talk about like all the nuances. I think these things are important for when we're discussing players of this magnitude. And like the surface level stuff does matter, because if you're just like, who's like the best player in the NBA? I'm like, well, it's LeBron James. Who's the second best player in the NBA? It's Kevin Durant. Who's the third? And then like, who's the third best player in the NBA? Like my answer's probably like, probably Steph Curry.
See, but this is the question, and I do agree with you that Kevin Durant second best player in the league. But this is where the conversation gets. I don't think it's really a conversation between Curry and reasonable people can disagree. You could argue Harden, you could argue Westbrook, you could argue Kawhi, certainly. Durant and Curry for me is sort of embodies this whole conversation that we've had.
Yeah.
It's Durant checks off so many more boxes, passes so many more eye tests, but the bottom line is the Warriors are better with Curry than they are with Durant. If you just look at the numbers, who without who, and there's some eye test that goes with that too, and it becomes a very interesting conversation.
The way that I came down on it at the end of the season was I kind of decided this, that Kevin Durant's a better basketball player than Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry is a more important player for the Warriors than Kevin Durant. The MVP of the Warriors is probably Steph Curry, the most not impactful.
Come a long way, because like 2 years ago, you tried to say the most important player was Draymond. So I'll give you that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that, again, I just think a lot of it is that you just tend to look at, like, you're just, I mean, you obviously have a lot of respect for Steph Curry, and that tends to be where a lot of it, like, I think you think that the defense just kind of gets there, and I tend to look at them and realize how difficult it is to be a fast-paced team that defends, and the way that just wrecks squads because nobody's ever done it before. Like, I really value, here's ironic, I really value the Warriors' versatility. I like how good they are at everything.
I wish they were worse at it because I want some competition.
Yeah, I mean, that would be way better. And that's part of the thing, right? And I guess I'll say this. I think, you know, if you're a really great shooting team that's really bad defensively, you're going to be about as bad as a really great defensive team that's really bad at shooting. I actually think probably that the bad defensive team can be a little bit better, because if we look at teams like Memphis the last couple of years, etc., like, you can make the playoffs and be even like a fifth seed with an average offense. If you have an average defense, you had better be a top five offense, and it better be like lights out. And the Rockets are kind of an example of this, where they put up, if it weren't for the Warriors, they were putting up historic numbers. And even then, like, they were a far ways off because of the gap in defense. But even then, like, you know, their defense was also a little underrated last year. But that was kind of the thing in the last couple of years. Like, the 2016 season when the Rockets were a disaster, like, their offense was fine. It was pretty good, but their defense was a nightmare, and they weren't very good. Blazers are the same thing. Like, their offense has been really good. The Nuggets are a perfect example of this. The Nuggets had the number one offense from January 1st through the end of the year, and basically since December 15th when Jokic got the starting job, they had basically a number two offense the entire season. But they weren't a playoff team, and they were still bad for a lot of that because they were 30th in defense. They had the worst defense. And I get what you're, I know the point would be, like, you can't be that bad at things. And that's what's kind of interesting, right? Is, like, what if you were, like, if you were really versatile?
Skeptical on, like, draft picks, right? So, like, certain guys, like, take De'Aaron Fox, for instance, who, not a good shooter, certainly from distance. Mm-hmm. His form looks pretty decent. He looks like a guy who's capable of becoming a good shooter. He's not looking like Kid Gilchrist or anything. But I look at players like that, and I just wonder, can you actually – I remember when everybody was pumped on Moutier. And I know, admittedly, I don't watch Moutier as much as you. But this may sound really uneducated, but I tend to think, in the little I've watched him, that he's basically capped out as a player to some degree just simply because he can't shoot. Like, he has a lot of other things, probably has a lot of potential
in
other areas. But he just can't –
Okay, so the problem really is you would do better with this with Elfrid Payton, because the problem with Emmanuel Mudiay is that he's an exceptionally gifted passer with incredible vision, and instead, because everyone says he can't shoot, he has people that have constantly told him, you need to score if you want to make it in this league and if you want to get paid. So Emmanuel Mudiay is always looking to score rather than making use of what he's good at, which is being a super athletic big body guard that would be a demon on defense if he committed himself, and being a great passer. Like, Emmanuel Mudiay would be a valuable player in this league. Not the best player on the team because his shooting is so bad, but a really valuable player in this league if he did that. It's that
he's probably capped out at like a Ricky Rubio.
You know,
Ricky's a good player, right? And I guess that's kind of my point, is like, I wonder about guys that we need to be better than that we're drafting high, that we're saying, okay, this is a guy that's going to change a franchise. And I just wonder if a De'Aaron Fox, I wonder this about Lonzo Ball, who his numbers look good. But I just don't know that Lonzo Ball is going to – all these other things that are important, the way that he runs a team, I think his instincts are off the charts. I think his feel for the pace of a game is incredible. A lot of things that you just can't teach. He's terrific. But I just wonder if, again, getting back to sort of our central thesis of the day, how important is shooting? I wonder if the day comes when some of these concerns about Ball come to fruition and he's just not able to get that shot off under duress. He basically becomes a shooter who is a guy on kickouts and transitions, but he's not going to be creating shots off the pick and roll for himself consistently. And he becomes a 32-33% shooter from downtown and not a high volume shooter by any stretch. So his effect, he's not going to be a defender. We know that. So his effects on the game pretty much comes down to his ability to traditionally run an offense and keep the pace high. I wonder, how good can you be?
Well, here's two questions. The first question is, can Damian Lillard be a top five player in the NBA, and can you win a title with Damian Lillard as your best player?
Whew. I don't think he can be a top five player in the league. I think for the reasons that you list about Curry, but he's just not as good as Curry. I think he's sort of the same type of thing. But I think you can win with Lillard as your best player. Yeah, I do. I think you can win a title if you had the right team around him. If you had Kevin Durant, I guess he wouldn't be the best player on the team then. But if him, Harden, those type of guys, I do think you could win a title with them being a superstar player on your team. I think they'd have to be joined by another superstar level talent, like most teams have to these days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you could win with Lillard.
Well, so here's like a really interesting kind of like the way to break it down in a very finite, like very nuanced, very carefully, delicately structured idea. Because like I said, James and I were talking about, can you build around Kyrie Irving? The thing is that we know that if you build like all right, LeBron's the best player, so it kind of messes it up. But I still think that if you had like a team of excellent defenders who could all shoot and score and rebound, and they were all awesome players, you could win with Kyrie Irving as your best overall player. You could win a championship. But I also think that Kyrie Irving is harder to build a good team around than it is around a more versatile player of equal skill like John Wall. You can plug him in other places and be good. That's kind of the difference, is guys that can shoot, if they're the best player on the team and they're an elite scorer, you can win a championship with them as your best player, because if you find those other pieces, you can win. Take a guy like a Ricky Rubio or an Elfrid Payton or even any of those guys, maybe even a John Wall. You can build better teams around their individual talents because they are able to make other guys better in different ways, but you may not be able to win a championship with them as their best player because of that shooting limitation. I think that may be the closest we're going to get to like kind of nailing it.
I would agree with that. I think that a good case of that is Derrick Rose's MVP year, which I think Derrick Rose was damn near as good as that year was damn near as good as a player can be without really being able to shoot. He was so good and so dominant in so many ways. But I don't think that team had a chance. Now you could say, well, anyone who ran into LeBron was going to lose. But I don't think that you could win with Derrick Rose and that the way that team was, which was he was the best player. It was kind of Derrick Rose or bust for the most part. And what he did in getting him as far as, I think they were over 60 wins, number one seed, they were terrific. They were better than Russell Westbrook was with the Thunder with a similar type situation. Unbelievable. But they weren't going to win. And I think in the end, I wonder if you can win with John Wall as your best player. And again, I'm talking about championships. These guys Derrick Rose would have gone without the injuries. John Wall will, without injuries, these are Hall of Fame players. But I don't think that you're winning a title. And that probably, there's probably some discrepancies there in how we evaluate there, where I'm kind of looking at pure value. What do you mean to actually impacting the game? And I think some people, and maybe sometimes you fall into this, where you evaluate more on just sort of like grading out skills. And I'm kind of just looking at what happens when you're in the game.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I don't know if John Wall or Westbrook or Derrick Rose in his prime, I don't know if you can win with those guys as your best player.
And it would be really great to see the comparisons, right? Like, it'd be really great to see if John Wall had, like, the perfect team around him. We've seen him with a really good team, but, like, a perfect team if, like, Morris wasn't as much of a hothead and was actually, like, a really great – if Marquise Morris was – I'm trying to think of it, like, Paul Millsap and like Marcin Gortat was like a Rudy Gobert. Like, you just had all this talent everywhere, and the bench was great, and the team was just like perfectly fit for John Wall. And like, it would be really interesting to see, like, what is Steph Curry like if he's on the Nets? Like, what is the impact? Because we can argue about what it would be, but we'll never be able to know because of those kind of restraints, because we won't be able to see it. And that's, I think, is what makes for an interesting conversation. All right, this has gone on like a really good length. I thought this was a really great conversation. We'll be back next week with a lot of other good stuff. You can catch us on Twitter at CBS Sports NBA. I'm on Twitter at Matt Moore CBS. You're at Brad Bakken CBS, right?
Yep.
Brad Bakken CBS. We will catch you guys next week.